Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Mystic Podcast, a Vampire Diaries rewatch podcast where we dissect each episode of the Vampire Diaries. And today we will be recapping season one, episode 22, episode titled Founders Day. It is the season one finale of the Vampire Diaries. So can you believe it? We have reached the finale, and it was a mind-blowing episode. Every single moment of this episode had me glued to the screen. No matter how many times I watch it, even though I know what happens, it's a really amazing, well-written, epic finale. So I've been so excited to talk about this episode, and it's just really an accomplishment that we've finished the whole of season one on this podcast together. Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts. We have lots of things to talk about, so stay tuned. And podcast update wise, so seeing as this is the season one finale, before we dive into season two of the Vampire Diaries, we will be doing a couple of wrap-up episode series. And hopefully, if my partner's available, I can bring him along to, you know, talk about season one together, because he has watched the whole series as well. And also, I was kind of thinking that I want to revamp my podcast. I mainly, you know, put out my podcast as a vampire media podcast. But realistically, you know, we're still on season one of Vampire Diaries here. And although I do cover like other vampire media here and there, it's very much a Vampire Diaries centered podcast. So I'm kind of revamping the image as a, you know, TVD podcast. It's going to be more TVD oriented. And some episodes, I kind of want to, you know, talk about things from a rewatcher's point of view. Like right now, I try not to reveal any major spoilers. So in the future, I might throw in some episodes where I, you know, talk about the storyline or things like that from, you know, a rewatcher's point of view, so other fellow rewatch fans of The Vampire Diaries can enjoy as well. So before we continue on with the episode, you can probably hear a siren in the background, but there's going to be very strong wind. I don't know if it was last week's episode or the week before. I was apologizing about the strong wind. So we weren't directly affected by this hurricane, but there's Hurricane Dora, I think it's called this time. And basically it went past the islands, and it's probably been in the news all over America, but there's been some really severe fires in the island of Maui. We're on a different island on Oahu, so we haven't been affected. It's just very strong winds. So yes, sorry if there's any noises. And, you know, it's really devastating as to what's happened onto the island of Maui. So it's, I really hope that everyone is, you know, staying safe. And if you have any family, that I hope that they are safe and okay. With that being said, let's dive into recapping the season one finale of The Vampire Diaries. Very first scene we have of the episode is really giving us 1864 vibes, and I really love these transitions they do. I mean, we've seen it when they transition 1864 to present day. Like, the way they shoot it, it's really good. And in this particular scene, we think that we're in 1864, but it's actually present day. We think that it's Catherine, but in fact, it's Elena preparing for the Founders Day float, Founders Day parade, and Jenna is helping her get ready. Really good song starts playing. So a song called Every Time You Go by Ellie Goulding starts playing, and I absolutely love this song. And although I have known of the artist Ellie Goulding, and I know her, you know, major songs, I didn't actually know of this song. So it's actually thanks to The Vampire Diaries that I found this song. So, I mean, I think I told you this in like way back when we started recording this podcast, how The Vampire Diaries playlist is top notch. I have a Spotify playlist with all the songs, and I'm thinking of making like a public playlist as well of like my all-time favorite songs. So if I do make it public, I'll link it so you guys can listen to it too. But they have introduced me to so many good songs and some artists I never knew of before, and it's come to the point where I don't really listen to hit top chart music. I'm practically listening to my Vampire Diaries playlist like every day. So yeah, this was my first favorite song of this episode. There is some really good songs later on too. So while the song is playing, we see the Founders floats and everyone preparing for the parade. And things are getting a little awkward between Damon and Stefan, because of course, in the previous episode, Isabel lets out the bombshell, the revelation that Damon is in love with Elena. And I think before the revelation was like put into words, they were kind of, everyone knew what was happening, but they were kind of just brushing it off. But now things are out in the open. It's awkward. There's tension between Damon and Stefan. Stefan seems very threatened this episode. He feels threatened by Damon, I think. And so they're talking about Elena, and one really funny scene is, well, I think this was probably intentionally filmed this way too, but they're talking about how Elena is not Catherine, and then they say she's not. And then you see a shot of Elena in her Civil War era dress. She looks the spitting image of Catherine, the curly hair, the dress, and it's not just the appearance, but the action that she does. She gives them like a mini curtsy and a smirk, and it just looks identical to Catherine. So I think they filmed this really well, and you can see the look on Damon and Stefan's eyes when, you know, they've literally just said that she's not like Catherine, but then there she is looking exactly like her. Seeing as you're listening to this podcast, it probably means that you've already watched the season finale. So I'm just going to say it here, but we have the revelation, the shocking revelation at the end of the episode that Catherine is back in town. And, you know, Catherine dresses as Elena. But I think I read somewhere there were some theories that this, because she looked exactly like Catherine, that this was Catherine and not Elena. But that I do not agree. I think that this was genuinely Elena just, you know, doing a curtsy to act like she was from that era. Meanwhile, back at home, Jeremy is also getting ready for the parade, and Anna appears. And, you know, Jeremy is sort of protecting John and defending him from Anna, because Jeremy says he's sorry about Anna's mom's death. And then Anna says, you don't have to be sorry. It's your uncle that killed. It's not like you killed her. It was your uncle. I kind of feel like she's being a little, you know, throwing a little jab there. But then Jeremy is like, you know, are you sure it was him? And then he's like, well, he doesn't understand. He's been taught that, you know, all vampires are enemies to humans. And so Anna gives a vial of her blood to him so that he can turn any time. And, you know, she says to him that she knows what it's like for Jeremy, how he feels empty, how he feels alone, and that if he's a vampire, he can just shut it off, and she would teach him how. Shutting it off, she doesn't say the words, but she's basically talking about the humanity switch. So we talked about the humanity switch concept in the previous episode, but, you know, I've always been rooting for Anna. I'd say, you know, out of the whole TVD family, I'm more leaning towards being a Jeremy Anna shipper. I like Anna. I mean, the only moment I didn't like her was, you know, when she was trying to get the tomb open, but I kind of let that one go because she was trying to reunite with her mom, who was taken away from her, and it's been her sole mission for, like, you know, 150 plus years. But this is one moment where I was like, okay, this is not exactly the right thing to say. It kind of feels like, you know, because Anna's lost her mom and she's all alone, you can kind of take it into the perspective that she's being a little selfish, saying that Jeremy can just turn off his humanity, become a vampire, and just not have a care in the world, because it's clearly not the best advice to give. And I think she's pushing, you know, her personal loneliness and emptiness onto him. She's projecting it onto him. So this was one moment where I was like, okay. But because of what happens at the end of the episode, it's hard to dislike her. Heading back to the main scene, the town square, Stefan tells Elena that John Gilbert is Elena's father. And, you know, he also throws in another comment where he's like, he wanted to tell Elena before Damon dropped it inappropriately. So it feels like he's constantly, you know, competing with Damon throughout the episode, trying to prove that he's the better choice. But I do think that it was really bad timing to tell her just before this parade. But I kind of feel that because Damon was at the, you know, town square too, he felt that he was in a rush to, like, let this revelation out before Damon tells Elena first. Also, Elena is talking about Jeremy and how, you know, Jeremy is still mad with her, won't forgive her for what she's done. And Stefan's like, you know, he's your brother. He will forgive you. Give him some time. I don't think this was intentional. I think this was just genuinely Stefan giving some advice, but it just kind of made me laugh how, you know, Stefan's like, give Jeremy some time to forgive Elena when it's taken 150 plus years and Stefan and Damon still have a rocky relationship. So yeah, everyone is at the parade. And of course, because the parade is, and because the parade is about the Founders' Day, about the founding families, it's of course set in the Civil War era. So we have the guys dressed up in Confederate soldier uniforms, I'm guessing. So we have Jeremy and Tyler in soldiers' uniforms. Speaking about Tyler, Tyler is back again in this episode and he's becoming more involved with, you know, the whole gang. And I did mention to you guys way back in like episode one, episode two, that, you know, Tyler doesn't really have much of a role during season one, but in season two, he gets a major storyline. And I think you guys probably can guess that already, why he has a storyline from what happens at the end, which we will talk about. So yeah. From this episode on, I think he's in like every episode for season two, unless he disappears for a bit. Maybe not every single episode, but has a major storyline arc. So we have all the so then the parade has begun, and the parade itself was actually very short, the parade scenes. It was more of like the fireworks and the nighttime sort of party, I guess, that was more bigger. But seeing the floats and the music and like the cheering, it's very American, let me put it that way. We do have parades in the UK and Japan, but I feel that American parades are on a different scale, and I feel that parades are held more frequently, like marching bands and those kind of things. I don't know, maybe it's just my like stereotypical opinion. Let me know if you live in other states. Do you have these kind of parades, events? If you live in a small town, do you have these kind of like founders events? So Elena is on the Miss Mystic Falls float. So we have the Miss Mystic Falls contestants and of course Caroline and Elena and each of their escorts. So this time Caroline and Matt, Elena and Stefan are on the float together. You remember in the Miss Mystic Falls dance, both the guys were absent. So Elena is waving to Bonnie. Bonnie's waving back, and then Damon just slides in front of Bonnie and is like smirking and waving. Then he turns around and he says thank you to Bonnie, and Bonnie seems confused. So he says, you know, thank you for deactivating the device. And Bonnie's like, well, I didn't do it for you. And Damon says that although he knows that she did it for Elena, that he feels grateful, and he says that he owes Bonnie. And he actually seems sincere. All throughout this episode, Damon is like a completely different character. I mean, in one of my wrap-up episodes in the upcoming weeks, I want to do kind of like a character analysis on how the characters have developed from season one, episode one, the pilot, to the season one finale, because I think there's been some huge growth in, well, Damon in particular. I think Damon is the main character who we've seen this growth and development. In the pilot episode, he didn't care about humans' lives. It almost seemed as if his humanity was off. But now we know that his humanity has been on the whole time, which I kind of assumed anyways. He's completely different. He actually shows compassion and cares about the people. So yeah, that's the end of the parade, actually. So it was pretty short, but we do get a small scene of the Mystic Falls football team on a float. And I was surprised to see them, to be honest, because I kind of thought that they didn't exist anymore, because throwing it way back to season one, episode three, Friday Night Bites, was it, I think, the episode title? Oh my gosh, okay, I'm already forgetting the episode titles, but I'm pretty sure it was Friday Night Bites where Mr. Tanner was killed by Damon, and then after that, they kind of didn't have football team practice because they didn't have a coach. But it looks like the football team does still exist. And meanwhile, so while this parade and everything is going on, John Gilbert and the mayor, Richard Lockwood, are together. They're preparing for the attack at nighttime. So they're talking about how they're going to do everything, how this device, once activated, only lasts for 5 minutes. So in that 5 minutes, all of the deputies will go around, look for the weakened vampires, inject them with a vein, put them all in the basement, and set it on fire, how things were supposed to be. And John is talking about how he had a source that the tomb vampires would, you know, are planning an attack during the fireworks, guessing that his source was Henry, the vampire we saw, was it two episodes back, maybe? Yeah, it was probably episode 20. We saw Henry, and I was talking about how He appears again in season 7. So talking about tomb vampires, the tomb vampires are very much preparing for the night attack on the founding families. And we don't really see much of these tomb vampires. There's literally just this scene and them attacking each and them trying to attack the town later on. Each character we're not really shown, but we do see Anat walk in. And I remember when I first watched the series, I genuinely thought that she was going to switch sides and be on their side now, which is kind of understandable. I mean, if you think about it, storyline-wise, it would make sense because Pearl was staked by John Gilbert, Harp was also staked, and she feels alone. Jeremy doesn't really seem to be on her side. She has nothing to lose. So I genuinely thought that at this point she was willing to join their team. But we see later on that Anna, you know, although being betrayed by the town, being betrayed by John, she still cares for the innocent humans' lives, and she was just playing double agent. So Elena is already out of her dress, which I was kind of sad about because I really loved her in the dress. But Damon says to her that, you know, she looks better how she is and how the period look didn't suit her. So I'm guessing that the period look looked too much like Catherine. There was an eerie resemblance. So I'm guessing he likes Elena, you know, just the way she is. No reminders of the past. And can I just say, I love Elena's wavy hair. You know, Elena's signature hair look is the long straight hair, and it is really nice, like really nice smooth straight hair, but it does kind of get, you know, repetitive seeing it every single episode. And it's literally the same, like it's always super sleek, super straight. So when I see her in a different hairstyle, it makes me happy for her because I'm sure the character herself would want to wear a different hairstyle for once too. And I think up until like season 4, Elena has the same hairstyle. So she has that long straight hairstyle for half of the whole Vampire Diaries series. But she finally gets some looks in the later on series. And Elena is saying, you know, you should stop with the flirty commenting and the eye thing that you do. And then Damon's like, what eye thing? And then he does the eye thing. So kind of, you know, she's friend zoning him here. So, you know, we see the kiss at the end of the episode. But from everything that Elena is saying throughout the episode, saying, you know, kind of friend zoning him here, later on telling Stefan that she loves him and only him, it's kind of foreshadowing that Elena isn't the type to cheat. Elena doesn't have those feelings for Damon at this point. But, you know, it does kind of leave us confused when we see the kiss initially later on. And meanwhile, Jeremy's also at the grill too. He still appears to be very mad at Elena. Damon's listening into this conversation, so he goes out of the grill to follow Jeremy. He defends Elena. You know, he's like, cut her some slack. She was just trying to protect you. And, you know, although Damon kind of threatens Jeremy, but I don't think he would actually hurt him at this point. I think he was just, you know, saying things harshly to make a point, to make him see Elena's side. But Stefan, of course, comes in to the rescue, to rescue Jeremy from Damon. And, you know, Damon's like, okay, I guess there's only one do-gooder role available. And, you know, Stefan seems to have the image that Damon is only being nice to people, being sincere for his own desires, for his own advantages. But I don't know, like, I actually think that Damon was genuinely being sincere this episode. Like, he was showing compassion when he didn't even need to. Like, for example, later on when he goes to Jeremy's bedroom and says that he will compel him again to take the pain away. He didn't need to do that. No one asked him. It's not like Elena was there watching him do it. So I think that Damon has really turned a new leaf and he's showing compassion for humans, not just Elena. We're leading to the middle of the episode. We're leading to the attack by the tomb vampires. So Liz has joined John Gilbert and Richard Lockwood to talk about this plan. Liz here learns about it for the first time and she's against it. She doesn't like how the town is being used at bait, how technically the humans are at risk. Wow. I was really in shock. It was a WTF moment. He knocks her out, you guys. He knocks Liz out. I don't even remember this moment happening. So when I watched it this week, I was like, wow. Yes, it was really shocking. I mean, when a supernatural creature is knocked out, like when a vampire is knocked out, when a vampire knocks out a human, it's not really that shocking. But human to human, I mean, of course, it's John Gilbert. What do you expect, right? But there's so many moments in this episode where I'm just like, oh, okay, John, you really don't have any redeeming qualities. And later on, he does some even worse stuff. So, yeah, he basically knocks her out because she's in the way of their plan and he wants to continue on with it. Anna has gone to find Damon to tell Damon about the attack. So here we find out that Anna was just playing double agent. She was just trying to find out information, and so she's passing it on to Damon. He thinks that the device has been deactivated. So he's like, well, the device was deactivated, so the vampires aren't going to get hurt. So from their point of view, it's like, oh no, now the vampires, there's nothing to stop them. The vampires are just going to throw a rampage and attack everyone. So we see the tomb vampires at the square getting ready, and Damon goes to find Elena. He grabs onto her hand, and Elena's like, what? You know, she's like, what is happening? So Damon tells them to leave. So he's really being the hero this episode, you know. He tells them to leave, but he is still going around trying to save the town. He goes to Alaric, tells Alaric to get some stakes and weapons. We have Caroline, Matt, and Tyler at the grill. So Caroline and Matt are sitting at one booth. Tyler is at like a bar counter. Caroline is really trying to get Matt and Tyler to get along again. Then we see the mayor walk in. He says to Tyler, you know, I told you to go home. Why are you still here? The first time he's pretty aggressive, and Caroline comes into the rescue to kind of soften the mayor, which I really think was nice of Caroline to, you know, step in there and help Tyler out. And again, we talked about Damon's character growth, but this episode, I've really seen some Caroline growth, I think. I mean, we see more Caroline growth in season two, but if you remember in the early episodes, I despise Caroline. And I admit it, I didn't like Caroline in the early episodes, but she really grows on you and she becomes one of the most popular characters of the whole entire series. So yeah, I'd say even in this episode, in Caroline's own way, you know, she's trying to get Matt and Tyler to get along, and she's grown on me, and she will grow even more on everyone in season two. She also has a major storyline in season two as well. So, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to talk about the next storylines, like Caroline's storyline and Tyler's storyline. Makes me so happy that I can finally talk about them soon, because I didn't want to reveal, you know, any spoilers yet. The mayor, you know, the second time round, he's really kind to them, and the second time round, he kind of softens, and he says to Tyler, please just go home, take your friends with you. So he's telling all three of them to leave. Kind of think that this can be taken into two ways. So one way is, you know, the mayor, he's genuinely worried about Tyler's well-being. He doesn't want them to be attacked by the vampires, so he generally just wants them to go home to be safe. Secondly, it could be because the mayor knew that the Lockwoods, him and Tyler, would react to the device, and so he didn't want Tyler to be there. But then again, I don't think so, because he wouldn't want to be at that moment too, and then Carol didn't know about it. He seemed pretty confused as to why he was down there, so I don't think that the mayor knows why. But we do get to find out why in season two, and that is what Tyler's storyline is going to be, to find out not what's wrong with Tyler, but what, let's just say, oh, I don't know how to say this without spoiling it, but let's just say we find out about Tyler's lineage, about his family, and it runs in the family. Well, we'll just say that. It runs in the family, and it obviously runs on the male side, because Carol didn't react to the device. So, the Lockwoods have something that runs in the family, and that becomes Tyler's storyline. So the mayor has gone back outside, he's saying his speech, and the fireworks begin. And as the fireworks begin, John turns on the device, and all the vampires start reacting, and there's this silent scene where there's no music. There's just the fireworks and then the vampires collapsing, and they switch like one firework, one vampire down, one firework, one vampire down. And the way they shot this scene was amazing. It made me emotional. Just seeing Anna collapse, Damon collapse, Stefan collapse, it just made me sad. I don't know why. It could be just me, but it's just the way they shoot it. You know, The Vampire Diaries is really good at shooting the, you know, scenes really emotionally. Meanwhile, you know, Tyler is driving back as his dad told him to, and Matt and Caroline are in the car as well. And Tyler reacts to this noise, which is confusing because we haven't seen any signs of Tyler or the mayor to be a vampire, and they know that they're not vampires. But clearly they're reacting to this sound. And so obviously, I mean, what can you expect? He's driving, but he's reacting to the sound. He doesn't have his eyes focused on the steering wheel or what's ahead of him, and the car crashes. Damon, of course, was right by John before John turned on the device. So John shoots him up with Vervain. He's put down into the basement, and Stefan collapses too. A cop is just about to head to Stefan, but Alaric distracts him and tells him that there's another vampire and he'll handle this one. And Alaric, you know, sort of manages to save Stefan. So Richard, the mayor, he collapses, so he's obviously reacted to the device. They inject him and take him away, even though he's the mayor. You know, technically, if the mayor was the one that was in on the plan, and if he's the mayor, you know, the head position, usually, you know, even if something bad happens, so usually those kind of position would be protected, if that makes sense. Like, for example, the president or like a prime minister. But the deputies don't hesitate in taking him away. And I think the reason why is because he's secretly hated. He doesn't seem like the nicest person. He doesn't seem like he treats his employees really well. Employees are other people. We saw that with Carol too. And how she treated, like, the catering staff in season 1, episode 4, Family Ties. So I'm thinking, you know, if they genuinely looked up to the mayor and liked him and respected him, they wouldn't have taken him away straight away. So it's clear that he was secretly hated. And that's the thing, you know. I think this is also kind of a theme in some, like, TV series or movies. I mean, I can't think of it, you know, straight off the bat, but this is the thing, you have to be kind to people, because even if you're in a high almighty position, if you treat people poorly, if you treat them with disrespect, when the time comes, they're just going to turn their back on you. You know, they might not be able to do it straight away because you're their boss, or like you're in a higher position than them, but when you're facing a downfall, no one's going to be there to support you because you treated them poorly. So it's kind of a good reminder for everyone to just treat people with respect, decent respect. You know, you don't have to like everyone. I mean, I'm not the most sociable person. I'm pretty satisfied with just staying at home with my dog. But when I'm outside, when I'm in social situations, I'm respectable to people, you know. You don't have to be their best friend. You just don't make them feel uncomfortable. And obviously, the mayor was never nice to anyone, and now he doesn't really have anyone on his side defending him. Anna is also taken away. Oh yes, I forgot to say. So Anna was at the grill with Jeremy, and Anna collapses from the sound too. She's taken away. All of the vampires are thrown into the basement. The gasoline is being poured onto them. And again, John spots Anna. And so he tells a deputy or something. He says that he'll handle this. He's left alone. And oh my gosh, a really, really sad scene is Anna joins her mom in death, in eternal death. He personally stakes her. There's so many emotional scenes throughout season 1. I mean, there's the time when Grams dies, Lexi dies. I mean, most deaths are pretty sad. I'd say Vicky's death was the only one that I didn't feel really emotional towards. Maybe it's because I didn't really like Vicky anyways, but another emotional one is when Anna finds Pearl. And then this scene with Anna being staked and Damon looking onto her being staked was a really emotional one for me. I just feel like John obviously had this mission. It was kind of a personal mission, personal agenda of his, I think. I think he wanted to burn down all the tomb vampires, but he had this personal vendetta against Anna and her mom because of the past and because how they were because of how Pearl was involved with Jonathan Gilbert and now how Anna was involved with Jeremy. But it's just so sad. You know, Anna grabs onto his leg thinking that he might, you know, show mercy or help. And the fact that Damon is looking on, but because he's weakened with a vein, he can't do anything. It's really tragic. And I'm really sad to see Anna go. You know, I really wanted to see Anna and Jeremy's relationship explored more. And like I said, I liked Anna. I think she was a nice vampire. I mean, she wasn't the worst vampire. We've seen worse vampires, and trust me, there's even more worse vampires. So I just wish they would have cut her some slack and kept her alive. Because when you think about it, her whole life has been tragic. You know, she spent 150 plus years trying to get this tomb open. She was alone all this time. Finally reunites with her mom, and I don't know how long the timeline is, but I don't know how long it is timeline-wise, but she only had like a few weeks maybe, a month with her mom. Mom is staked. She has Jeremy, but then we don't really know if Jeremy's fully on her side or not. And then John Gilbert ends up staking her. So it's just really tragic how Pearl and Anna were both killed by the Gilberts. John sets the basement on fire, so all the vampires are burning, and Damon spots the mayor and he's like, what are you doing here? And the mayor's like, what are you doing here? So he doesn't really answer it. And then Damon's like, well, I'm a vampire. What are you? And then the mayor's face, he looks really distraught. So you just know, like, it's pretty clear that the mayor is not a vampire. He truly hates vampires. He tries to flee away from Damon when Damon reveals he's a vampire, only to fall into the hands of a tomb vampire. And then the tomb vampire looks happy, snaps his neck and kills the mayor. So technically they did get their revenge, just it was like a mutual suicide, kind of. It was a mutual death. And I think there's this quote that I really love, which is, I don't know the exact words, but it's, when seeking revenge, dig two graves, which means, you know, if you're looking to have revenge on someone, you got to realize that your life might be at risk too. And I like this quote because it's from a TV series that I watched last year. It was one of my favorite series of last year, called Revenge. That was a really, really good one. So if you are into Gossip Girl, TVD, Pretty Little Liars, I'd say you definitely love that show too. It's 4 seasons, so it's not really, I think it was 4 seasons or 5 seasons, so it's not really that long of a show in retrospect. We unfortunately don't get an answer as to what Richard is. We don't even know if Richard died knowing what he was. So while the vampires are burning down, Elena, Steph, and Alaric are talking together, and they pretty much figure out that device probably wasn't deactivated. Also, Carol spots Liz, so she unties her, and Carol just looks really, really confused. She doesn't know what's going on. She says that they took Richard away. And this is the start of a duo that I end up really liking. So Carol and Liz were never really close. You know, they're both founding family members, and they're part of the secret council. They're kind of tolerating each other because her husband's the mayor and, you know, Liz is the sheriff. But they never really got along. I think maybe I do remember in season 4 they were really close. But I do know that they get really close, and I actually like this duo. You know, they sort of run the town together because, of course, now the husband, the mayor, is gone. You know, Carol has to step in for now, and so they have to work together. And I do know that they get closer, and I kind of like the two of them. I'm not spoiling anything, but it's like the things I say might cause you to guess. So I'm just going to say I like the two of them becoming closer. Luckily, Tyler, Caroline, and Matt aren't dead. And Caroline is saying to Matt that she's okay, you should go to Tyler first. But then she faints in the background. She's taken to the hospital. And Tyler opens his eyes once, and the paramedic is super shocked because when he opens his eyes once, we see his eyes are like, they're like supernatural. He literally looks like a supernatural creature. You know, has these green eyes, but then he opens his eyes again and they're back to normal. So again, this is foreshadowing that something is obviously off. There's got to be something. I mean, he's just reacted to the device, but he's not a vampire, so what could he be? I think if you've watched Supernatural series before, if you've watched Vampire series, if you've watched Twilight, it's pretty easy to guess, you know, what Tyler could have, what Tyler could be, because I'd say these two supernatural species really, you know, tie in together. It just makes sense. So let's talk about the last 15 minutes of the episode. Stefan and Elena are headed to the Gilbert practice. They want to go and save Damon. John Gilbert is standing there. He tries to stop Elena from going any further, but then Elena says, "I'm asking you not to." And John is like, "Well, that doesn't mean anything." And then Elena says, "As my father, it should." You know, she really uses the, you know, adoptive cards, the birth mother, birth father card really well. We've seen how well she uses it. She used it with Jenna in the past. And here you can see John is in utter shock and he's like, "You know." And then Elena is like, "Well, I wasn't sure but until now." So pretty much from saying that, it was kind of also a test to see how John would react. And the way John reacted, it's pretty obvious that yes, Elena is very much John's daughter. Stefan heads inside to the building on fire, and Elena is stopped by Bonnie. Bonnie grabs onto her, and she starts channeling her. I think we saw channeling in the Tomb episode, probably. Bonnie and Graham's channeling together. So basically, you know, witches can channel from nature. They can channel from magical objects, and they can also channel from other humans. That's how they do, you know, locator spells as well. For example, if they have a blood relative, they would use the blood of the relative to locate the other person, or they can just channel humans to gain more energy, gain more power. And through this, Bonnie manages to clear a pathway. So basically from the door, there's like a cleared path of fire. So Stefan manages to save Damon. But of course, that doesn't mean that any of the other vampires got out. All of the other vampires are dead. They were burned down. So Stefan and Elena back in the grill. Stefan says that he, no matter how much he tries to hate Damon, he just can't. And what I think, and what I'm sure other Vampire Diaries rewatchers would think, is, you know, this show starts off as a love triangle. It starts off as, you know, in the past it was Stefan, Damon, and Catherine. In present day, it's Damon, Stefan, and Elena. But, you know, throughout the show, there is this love triangle theme. It's always there. But I do think that this series isn't just a love story. And I think that's also another reason why this series is so popular with both genders, because if it was just a love story, it would mainly be female fans. But I think Vampire Diaries has lots of male fans as well, because this series isn't just teenage love. It's way more deeper than that. It's about family. It's about family bonds. And you really see this brotherly bond between Stefan and Damon, which is funny because they actually have their own bourbon company now. They started it like 2 years ago, Brothers Bond Bourbon. Throughout the seasons, and I'd say the latter seasons, like season 7, season 8, we really see this. We see that, you know, this show wasn't just a love story between one girl and two brothers, but it's a love story between two brothers and their bond as a family. I'm not sure if I'm completely accurate, but I do remember someone saying that, whether it was one of the actors or one of the writers, them mentioning how, you know, it's really the bond between Stefan and Damon that is also a main plot of the series. You know, Elena says to Stefan that she cares about Damon, like Stefan does, but she reassures Stefan here and she says, "But I love you, Stefan." And she really emphasizes the "you." And Elena says that she's going to head to the school to pick up her stuff and then go back home. At the Gilbert residence, Damon has gone to see Jeremy, which is surprising. He just arrives at, you know, Jeremy's room. He goes to tell Jeremy that Anna is dead. And Jeremy is like, you know, he pretty much assumed that that happened. And Damon is here to offer to compel Jeremy again to take the pain away, to take the bad memories away. And Jeremy said that, you know, even though you think that you have took the pain away, it's still there. Even though he can't remember directly what happened, he still feels the emptiness, he still feels alone, he still feels sad. And, you know, I'm kind of torn because, you know, through some of the episodes I say that Jeremy is this annoying little brother, whiny little brother, but it's these moments where you have to realize that Jeremy is a 15-year-old teenager. He lost his parents, he lost his first love, you know, he lost his virginity to Vicky, so technically it's his first love, and now he's lost Anna. Very traumatizing childhood, teenage years that he's going through. So it's these moments where you have to remind yourself that he's just a young teenager and he's been through a lot of pain, he's gone through loss, and he's in grieving. So, you know, Jeremy turns down Damon's offer of compulsion, but he talks about vampires and how Anna mentioned that vampires can turn off the feelings, the hurt. And Jeremy's like, is it better that way? And Damon says, it is easier. He says, life sucks either way, but at least if you're a vampire, you don't have to feel bad. Which wasn't the best thing to say, but of course it's not Damon's fault, he didn't know. But because, you know, Jeremy thinks it's an easy option, he takes a drastic action later on. Also, oh yes, forgot to mention, Damon also apologized for Vicky. So all in all, Damon is just being genuinely sincere to everyone, it seems, in, you know, this episode. Jeremy says, have you done it before? Have you shut off those feelings? And Damon says he did it in the past and it was easier. So he admits that it's easier to shut off your feelings. I mean, of course it is. You don't have to deal with pain or guilt. But through this, we can kind of tell that Damon's probably had his humanity on the whole time. You know, some people might have this theory that Damon turned on his humanity midway through season one, but I don't think so. I think that, like I said last episode, Damon and Isabel, they're good at putting this act up. And I think even with us humans, you know, not supernatural species, but us humans in our everyday lives, some of us are good at bottling up our emotions and feelings and putting on a smile. But then when we're back home, we're faced with depressed feelings, we're really sad. And I know that because I'm more of that person as well. I'm not really the most open person when it comes to my emotions. And throughout my teenage years, I'd say, you know, I'd bottle up things. I'm more of the type to just shut off those feelings on the outside and pretend everything is okay, but it's not. So been there, done that. So I know that Damon and Isabel had their humanity on. We're taken to the hospital next, and you know, Matt and Tyler have kind of made up, I guess, because Tyler, you know, genuinely feels bad for what happened to Caroline, and Matt's like, you know, it's okay. Sheriff walks in, she's in tears. I mean, obviously it's been such a dramatic night for her. Caroline is in surgery, and then she says to Tyler, you know, you should call your mom. And Tyler's like, why? And then she's like, it's about your dad. So the sheriff obviously knows about, you know, Richard being burned in the basement. So I think those tears were not just for Caroline and her being in surgery, but also sympathetic feelings towards Tyler because she knows the truth. Then we have Jeremy attempting suicide. I'm going to say attempting because technically we don't see him die. We don't see him lose consciousness. But basically, he takes all these pills out, and there is a close-up of the pills, and it's Elena's pills. If you remember, Elena was prescribed these pills after the car accident. They were used once with Vicky. Remember, Vicky took out the pills, and Jeremy says to put them away, and now it's Jeremy's turn to take the pills. He takes a bunch of pills and drinks Anna's blood, and we're kind of left to there. So we don't know what happens with Jeremy. We'll just have to wait and see in season two. But I would say when Elena finds out that Jeremy overdosed on her pills, I think it's really going to affect her as well on a whole other level. I mean, the fact that her brother is attempting suicide itself is traumatic, but the fact that he used her pills puts it on a whole other level. So Stefan, I think, says thank you to Bonnie for, you know, helping him out with rescuing Damon, but Bonnie warns Stefan, and she really has this strong energy from her. You see, I feel like after Grams' death, there's like this personality shift in Bonnie. She seems more, she has a more dark personality, but it's also like she's more strong now. Now she knows what she's capable of. She knows her powers. So she warns Stefan that next time Damon drops even an inch of innocent human blood, she will take him down, and she will take Stefan down as well. So this is kind of foreshadowing that, you know, Bonnie knows what she's capable of. She's more stronger now. She knows how to utilize her magic. So we're probably going to see more of her magic in future seasons. We have my next favorite song of this episode play, and it is a song called Bloodstream. Really love this song. This is another song that is on my playlist that I play every week. I play this song, and we have a Damon and Elena scene. And I'm going to say Elena in quotation marks because later on we find out that it wasn't Elena. So they're at the Gilbert porch. Damon talks about how he came wanting to he came to this town wanting to destroy it, but now tonight he wanted to protect it. And he's like, how did that happen? So as I said, the character development is huge with Damon. You know, we see him in the pilot episode, he very much has hate towards the town. He admits it to Stefan. You know, at first he wanted the Tomb Vampires to all come out just out of revenge, but we really saw a different light to him in this episode. And I think that not just this episode, but from seeing the flashback episode Blood Brothers, seeing how Stefan was the one that forced Damon to turn, every episode it's kind of been one step closer to redemption for Damon, like us feeling bad for him, feeling sympathetic for him. And I just really like how The Vampire Diaries writes their villains so well. Out of all the villains we're going to see in a future series, Damon is not a villain at all. Like, he still has these bad moments, he's impulsive, he does bad things, terrible things, but on a scale of 1 to 10, he's not up there with the the other villains that we're going to see, which I'm really excited for. Catherine is up there. On the villain level, she is at the top. Damon says this really good quote. He says, somewhere along the lines, you decided that I was worth saving. Oh my gosh, what a great line. I love this line. And at first, Damon kisses Elena on the cheek, I think, as a way to say thank you. But because Elena doesn't hesitate, well, Elena/Catherine, he kind of takes it as an invitation to kiss her, and so they make out. And I really love this scene. I really love this scene both ways, to be honest. If it was a Damon and Elena kiss, I would have been really, really happy because I'm a Delana shipper. But at the same time, for a love triangle, I'd say it's a little bit too early for them to be kissing because we're only on season one out of 8 seasons. So finding out it was Catherine was a really good plot twist. And also, I kind of ship Daffrin. I just think that they would have made a really good couple, like as a modern day vampire couple. But at the same time, the way Catherine used him, you know, obviously Damon doesn't feel the way that he did in 1864 for her anymore. But all in all, it was really good way to end the season. Well, we're not at the very end yet though, because what happens, you know, this is a really huge moment itself. And, you know, Jenna opens the door. She looks shocked. I think she says to Elena to come in or something. And from that, Catherine has now been invited into the house, which is obviously going to be an ongoing issue. She already does something drastic in a moment, but now Catherine's been invited in. It's going to be a problem for season 2. And when you first watch it, you know, when I first watched it, I genuinely thought that this was Elena, and I was confused because she literally just said that she loves Stefan, but she's kissing Damon. So when you rewatch it, it just makes sense that it's Catherine. And from a first time watcher, you're not going to get it. So I suggest that if you enjoy The Vampire Diaries as much as I do, you rewatch the series in the future to analyze the actions, because once you know Catherine and how she acts, you really see, I mean, even now you can go back and watch it, but you can, when you analyze it, you can really see that it's not Elena. Like the facial expressions, the way that she talks, you can tell that it's Catherine pretending to be Elena. And I just want to say that Nina Dobrev is an amazingly talented actress, because not only does she act Elena and Catherine, like she portrays both of them, they're like completely different characters, completely different people, but she also manages to portray Catherine pretending to be Elena. And then in the future, we actually get Elena pretending to be Catherine in, I'm not sure, but I think it's later on seasons, but she manages to distinctly act differently between all of these roles. So really, if you're not really talented acting there. So John is in the kitchen. He thinks that it's Elena, but of course it's Catherine. So he's talking about how he was really in love with Isabel. He felt that she was special, but Isabel probably didn't feel the same way about him. So my theory in the previous episode, when Isabel said that Elena's birth father is a high school waste of space, she genuinely thinks that. I really think that Isabel didn't really have those strong romantic feelings for John. It was more of like a fling to her, and her true love is probably Alaric, but John obviously, on the other hand, really fell in love with Isabel, and you know, he was the one that gave her the knowledge of vampires, led her to Damon, and he even says to Elena / Catherine that part of the reason why he hates the vampires this much is because of what Isabel has become. And if he knew that this would happen, he never would have sent her to Damon. So it kind of makes sense. I think, you know, John Gilbert grew up with this knowledge of vampires and Mystic Falls. His older brother taught him, his parents must have taught him. And so he already had this initial hate of vampires, but it probably wasn't as strong. But then, because his true love, you know, seeing the person that he loves change into this, you know, emotionless creature, it made his hatred to vampires stronger. So, I don't know, like, I hated him for the episode for what he did to Liz, how he staked Anna. It's in these moments that you can kind of understand where he's coming from. And this is what I mean, you know, Vampire Diaries is written so well that even the most horriblest, even the most terrible characters, the characters you hate, the worst villains, they have redemption arcs. They have a stronger backstory that makes you feel for them, and you see how that shaped them into the villain that they are. The only one that I haven't seen for season one with this sort of redemption is probably Logan Fell. Logan Fell was just, you know, terrible to begin with, a cheater, a liar, smarmy, yeah, don't like him. But even Vicky, you know, I don't like Vicky. I'm the first to admit that I never really liked Vicky. She's one of my least favorite characters, but you can kind of see why she is the way she is, because her dad left, her mom is absent, you know, she doesn't want to trust people, so she'd rather hook up with people than have like an actual relationship with someone, because she's scared to let someone in. You can kind of be sympathetic for her. So yeah, that's one good, and that's another good thing that Vampire Diaries are really good at, is about, they write their characters really well, and they actually show each backstory of each character throughout the series. I think John is like, can I help? He says, can I help, to Elena / Catherine. Catherine says, sure. And then she cuts the ring finger of John. So John is fingerless now. And then John realizes, and he's like, Catherine? And then vamp eyes, we see the vamp eyes on Catherine, and she says, hello, John, goodbye, John, and stabs him. And we don't get to see John die. So again, like Jeremy, it's like, we don't know what's happened to Jeremy or John, if both of them are dead, or if one of them is dead, or if they're both alive, if Jeremy's a vampire, or if he's not a vampire, we don't know. But we see Elena arrive at the Gilbert house. I think she's on the phone to Stefan, saying that someone took her stuff. She says, I love you, Stefan. So here it all really makes sense. Catherine stole her stuff and was impersonating her, kissed Damon. So she's really stirred things up, you know. And so the episode ends with Elena walking into the Gilbert residence, not knowing that there is disaster in both upstairs and downstairs. You know, recently I talked about how I've been kind of like unmotivated to record the podcast. And so my episodes, I think you've probably noticed, are a little bit shorter. They're like before the 40 minute mark. But for this finale, it was just so epic. Really enjoyed it. There was so much to talk about. So it's a little bit of a longer episode today, probably. But wow. That episode was chef's kiss. Like, literally amazing. I mean, I use epic a lot, but it was epic. And so the IMDb score pretty much reflects how I feel too. This was ranked 9.2 out of 10, so practically a 10 out of 10. And I'm just going to read some of the comments, some of the reviews that I saw on there. So one review writes that this was the best episode of season one. It was really well written. And another person says that Tyler is finally becoming interesting. So yes, I mean, Tyler hasn't really had much of a, you know, plot, much of a storyline. His sort of arc for season one has been being the douchebag. But yeah, things are going to become interesting. Season two, he has a storyline for season two, and it becomes a main part of season two, actually. So look forward to that. And another review was writing how they were trying to avoid The Vampire Diaries for so long, but they caved in and watched it. Really enjoyed the finale. And apparently this person was a Twilight hater, and that's why they were avoiding the show. So I do remember back when Twilight was released back in 2008. Those were the glorious days for TV. Twilight was like, it caused a phenomenon, but many people disliked Twilight. Many people thought it was stupid. And so I can get how Twilight and the Vampire Diaries can be put into one genre of like teenage vampire love stories. And so if you hate Twilight, you're probably more likely to avoid TVD. But I'm really glad that this person gave The Vampire Diaries a chance and watched it, because it's more than just a teenage love story, like I said. And as you watch the series, you would feel that too. I mean, it's been so long since I watched Twilight, and I am going to do a rewatch after season two of The Vampire Diaries. But I can kind of get how maybe adults wouldn't enjoy watching Twilight. It is more teenage catered. But for Vampire Diaries, I don't think so. I think it's a show that middle-aged adults and parents can watch as well, and that's why you do see a wide range of fans. For example, even the conventions, like the convention that they have in Mystic Falls, which is I Was Feeling Epic convention, when I was looking at the videos and like the meet and greet photos, the age range was pretty wide. And especially because it was first released 10 plus years ago, you know, people that watched it at the time are adults now, parents now. You even see some people bring their children with them, which is so cool. Like, they watched the show and then their teenage daughter or son watched it and they became fans together. So it's really nice to see. And speaking of conventions, this is totally like off plot, but as I was saying, I do want to make this podcast more like solo TVD oriented, because it's just the one show that I'm so passionate about. Let me know if you're interested, but I thought I could do like a podcast episode after like the conventions happen. Like, even though I'm not going, I see a lot of stuff online and like there's all these interviews and everything. So it would be fun to do like a recap talking about it. And there has been some convention drama last week. I think it was after I recorded last week's episode, but basically the next convention for the I Was Feeling Epic convention is in Christmas. So it's like I Was Feeling Festive in Mystic Falls, I think that's the name of it. And this is going to be a huge convention, because I did announce this when it was first announced a few months back, that it's going to be Nina Dobrev's first convention in a long time, and everyone was excited about it. I was really excited about this too, and not just because it's Nina's first convention in ages, but also because it was going to be the first time that the trio was reunited, you know, Nina, Ian Somerhalder and Paul Wesley. But then last week, it was announced on their Instagram that Ian had pulled out for reasons we don't know. And then there's kind of been, you know, drama between the fans and the community. So yes, Ian pulled out, but Nina's still gonna go. And it's like, it is sad that we're not going to see the original trio, but Ian does a lot of conventions and he does lots of events with, you know, their bourbon. You know, Ian and Paul do lots of events with their bourbon together. But for Nina, it's like her first convention in so, so long. So I don't think that should be a reason for people to ask for refunds. There's been people asking to refund the tickets because the trio isn't going to be together. And I think one time only the convention team, you know, allowed refunds to happen. But I don't get it. If you're a fan of the Vampire Diaries, just because one cast member pulled out, I would never refund the tickets, because if I had the opportunity, I would have gone in a heartbeat. The tickets sold out so quickly, and just realistically, you know, it's difficult to go all the way from Hawaii. I mean, I know some people flew from different countries, but it's difficult. Financially, it would cost a lot to do the meet and greets and everything. Having a Frenchie, a very needy Frenchie, I can't just leave him. And also, work scheduling wise, like my partner's work scheduling wise, it's difficult to like plan tickets that far in advance because we just don't know what will happen with work. And so for me, it's like an opportunity of a lifetime to be able to go. So I was really shocked that, you know, people were refunding the tickets, asking for refunds, but, you know, each to their own. So yeah, I just wanted to throw that in. There's been some convention drama, but I am really excited to see, you know, thankfully the convention made this YouTube channel where they post the the talk shows that are hosted between the cast. So I watch those, and so yeah, I'm thinking winter time I could maybe do like a recap of the convention. So let me know if that's something that you'd like to know. So where were we? Okay, we were talking about IMDb reviews, and one more comment. It said that TVD is very well known for their good finales, and season one was an epic one. I agree with that. I think they really write their finales well. I mean, season finales are supposed to be dramatic, are supposed to leave us with a cliffhanger, anticipating the next season, but TVD does it really well. I think season one finale might be my favorite out of all 8 seasons. I'm gonna make a note of that, and then way into the future when we recap everything, I'll see if this really was my favorite finale. But I'm pretty sure season one finale and season three finale is also my favorite, and season four. So actually, practically all the seasons have a really good bombshell or cliffhanger. Trivia fact wise, there was only 2 trivia facts. One trivia is, obviously, this was the first episode to feature present-day Catherine. So up until now, we only saw her in flashback scenes from 1864, but now she is in the flesh in present-day Mystic Falls. And second trivia fact is that the Gilbert Clinic was burnt down due to them throwing the tomb vampires in and setting it on fire. So now, going to wrap up this podcast with my final thoughts. First of all, I just want to say I love this episode, if it couldn't be any more obvious. This finale, you know, Vampire Diaries season finales are always great. There's shows that I watch where I kind of watch for the purpose of going on my phone at the same time. I'm sure a majority of you are the same too, but when it comes to reality shows or some TV series, some Netflix series, you just throw it on for the sake of it to play something, but you're not looking at every scene, and you don't even need to. You can just be on your phone and like on Instagram or whatever. But Vampire Diaries is one of the shows where that isn't the case. Like if I am on my phone for like a few minutes, I've missed something happening, and I don't want to be on my phone. It's the kind of show where I want to be glued to the screen, because there's humor, there's emotion, there's sadness, there's shipping. You're busy watching the show. And this finale, like, there was not one moment that was dull. There was not one moment where I wanted to look away from the screen. I mean, all episodes are like that, but this finale, the finale episode in particular, just so much stuff happened. They wrote it so well that it's really got you anticipating for season 2. So much things, like each character has a different dimension to them, a different development in their story, and they wrote it really well. So I didn't have the opportunity to watch this real time, which I'm really sad about. You know, I wish that I could have gone back in time and watched the Vampire Diaries alongside of Gossip Girl, just to have the feeling of, you know, having to wait for an episode each week. Because I mean, fortunately, in a modern day world, we can just put on Netflix, Amazon Prime, whatever you have, and we can just binge watch. And although I love a good binge watching session, it makes it easier for us to just watch each episode. And so the finale doesn't seem as dramatic, if that makes sense, because we just watch the next episode straight away. And that aspect. I actually like doing this podcast because it forces me to restrict myself to only watch one episode per week, because I don't want to kind of like ruin my opinion, and I want to have a fresh opinion for each episode. So in a way, it's kind of been good to like have to wait for each episode. But yeah, so much has happened. I think the number one thing to take from this episode was the fact that Catherine is back, because, you know, Catherine has been talked about all throughout the season. Catherine has been the reason that Damon and Stefan are vampires, and we thought that she was dead this whole time. Because we thought that Catherine was dead, we had the whole tomb chapter. The tomb was basically open because Damon wanted to get Catherine out. And then now the device was set off because Catherine wanted the tomb vampires dead. And now Catherine is back in the flesh. So technically all of the season one plot lines are practically revolved around Catherine. And now we get to see her in flesh. It's just set off so many possibilities on what could happen. Is Elena going to see Catherine? What is Catherine's motive on wanting to burn the tomb vampires down? Why is Catherine back after so many years? Will she be in contact with Stefan and Damon? Does she want to be with them? You know, there's so many things that could happen and so many questions that are still unanswered at this point. And luckily, season two, I think, Catherine is in nearly every episode for season two, so she actually gets a boost up to her role. So it does mean that Nina Dobrev is working full-time, double shifts, and I was curious because technically that's two roles that she's playing, two major roles. So I think I looked up before on Google, like, if she got paid extra because she's playing two roles, and I think she wasn't, which I was really surprised about because she obviously had double the lines to remember. And she, you know, she had way more scenes to film, but I don't think that she was paid double. Maybe she was just paid like a little bit of extra. And another cliffhanger we're left with is, of course, Jeremy and John. So John, it seems that John was killed, but we don't know. Because the ring was what was protecting him from preventing dying. But because Catherine cut off the ring finger, he could be dead. And, of course, Jeremy overdosed on all of those pills and took Anna's blood. So, is he going to be a vampire? Is he not? We don't know yet. And it was a really tragic death with Anna. So, really, really sad about that. And, oh yes, of course, Tyler, Richard, and Caroline. So, you know, of course, Elena, Stefan, Catherine, Damon are like the four main characters. It's not three main characters. It's going to be four main characters now. But there's very much a storyline that's going to be developed between, you know, what is exactly happening to Tyler and why Tyler and Richard reacted to the device. And of course, Caroline, you know, Caroline, technically, we don't know if she's going to be alive or not because she's in surgery and suffering severe internal bleeding. So it's kind of brushed off in the episode because, you know, we had the Catherine thing and the Tyler thing, but technically Caroline's life is on the line too. So many cliffhangers they've left us with. We have to wait until season two. So luckily we're not on a regular TV schedule, so we're not going to wait, you know, 6 to 9 months until the next season. I'm going to do a few wrap-up episodes. Starting off next week, I'm going to be doing a season one wrap-up. So basically talking about all of season one in general as a whole storyline. Just talking about my favorite moments, least favorite moments. I haven't decided the order of what I'm going to do after that, but I am going to dedicate an episode talking about character development. And if I feel that I need to talk about each character in depth, I may split it up into different sections. Like this week, talk about these characters. This week, talk about that. Also going to do an episode dedicated to favorite music, favorite costumes, because I love watching costume analysis kind of videos where they analyze, you know, costumes of certain characters. I watch those kind of things on YouTube, so I'm thinking of doing an episode about that. And, oh yes, when I talk about characters, I am going to also count up total who was my most favorite character and least favorite character for season one. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. I can kind of guess who my favorite character probably will be and least favorite character, but yes. So lots and lots of TBD season one themed content still to come, so definitely stay tuned. In between season two, I may take a small break, and I'm probably going to cover like a short, you know, vampire movie, or like a really short vampire, like one season series, just to kind of like take a break, and then we will move on to season two. And calculation wise, we're probably going to start season two at like, I'd say this autumn. So I'd say from this autumn to, I mean, this took me 6 months to do season one. So I'm guessing from this autumn to like maybe next spring, that would be season two. And we're going to have to do something for like our 1 year anniversary on the podcast next year. Yeah, I can't believe it's been 6 months, you guys, since we started this. We're currently at about 350 downloads, so thank you so much to anyone who has downloaded my episodes, saved them, listened to them. Really, really appreciate the support. My favorite music for this episode, I have two favorite songs. The first one is Every Time You Go by Ellie Goulding. Really, really loved it. And the second one is Bloodstream by Stateless. For characters I'm going to stake, this one is going to have to be John Gilbert. I mean, could it be any more obvious? Even though at the end, his life is kind of in the hanging, for what he did to Anna and for what he did to Liz, without a doubt, he's the character that I had to stake. For characters I'm turning Damon and I'm turning Elena. So for Damon, I'm turning him because he really has redeemed himself. I mean, he's still going to have his slip-ups. He's still going to be kind of a villain in future episodes, future seasons, but just to see how far he's come from season one, the pilot episode, to now, all because he fell in love with Elena. You know, it's because of Elena that he's really decided to change for the good, and I'm just hoping that with Catherine back, that's not going to change anything. For Elena, I mean, there wasn't particular moments where I was rooting for Elena. I think it's more to do with, I liked how she looked in her costume dress, and then I just like the moments between her and Damon. So yeah, I'm going to put Elena. And oh, should I add Catherine as well? Okay, I'm going to add Catherine into characters I'm turning, just because when I first watched this, I genuinely thought it was Elena that was kissing Damon, and just to find out that Catherine was back, I remember being so excited, so surprised. So I'm gonna add Catherine as well, just because it's really stirred up things in the Gilbert residence. She's the one character that we've been, you know, anticipating to see. We anticipated seeing Isabel after we found out that Isabel was turned, but you know, Catherine is like the OG that we've been waiting for. So yes, that is all for the season finale. So thank you so much if you tuned in. I think this episode was slightly longer, but you know, it is the season finale. So next week we will do a season one wrap up. And I am thinking of doing like one episode where I talk about season one from a rewatcher's perspective. So that episode will be spoiler filled. So if you're a first time watcher, do not watch that. If I do decide to record that episode, I will write in the episode description, this is spoiler filled in caps lock, so you will know not to watch that you will know not to listen to that if you're a first time watcher of the series. So that is all. My question for this episode is, what are your season two predictions? From seeing this season one finale, please let me know what you think will happen. What do you think about Catherine's return? Do you think Jeremy will be a vampire? And so on. And if you have not already, I would really, really appreciate it if you saved or subscribed this podcast wherever you're listening, whether it be from Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really boosts the algorithm up. And if there's anyone that loves the Vampire Diaries, I'd really appreciate it if you shared this podcast. Also, please give me a review. I would love to see your thoughts. And our Instagram is at The Mystic Podcast. You can contact me personally on there or give me any feedback. So that is all for season one, episode 22, Founders Day. I will see you next week for season one wrap up. So I'll see you next week to talk all about season one of The Vampire Diaries.